review of State Space. And that's chapter 6. Excuse me. So, how many people actually had a chance to review chapter 6 and look it over? Nobody. Okay. Very well. Well, I did, so... Yeah, I actually did that this morning, though. So, I think I even read it all this morning. So, I mean, you can kind of remember there's two kinds of control, what they call modern control, state space, and classical control was, transform methods, okay? And actually use transform with state space. Basically, state space is taking an nth order differential equation, turning it into n first order differential equations. The advantages of state space are that you can see, it breaks the space down into four groups, okay? There's the states that are observable and controllable. They're the states that are observable but not controllable. They're the states that are controllable but not observable. And there are the states that are neither controllable or observable, okay? Does that make sense? You can have, systems that there's no input or output, that's not controllable or observable, right? I mean, you got some spring mass damper, but there's no way you can see what's happening, and there's no way you can, make it jump around, have any input on it. And there are the ones where you have an input, which goes into the thing, and it can influence the state, but there's no way to see it in your output, okay? And then there are the kind that, there's no input, but it does affect your output, and then there are those that, are standard. You have input, the input where you can change the state with your input, and you can see the state on your output. So that's an advantage of state space. But basically, it does the same thing. Okay, it's maybe a more elegant way of doing things, but it does the same thing. Okay, so let's just look and see here. You guys remember this kind of thing, the state equation here? X, if it's linear, you can write it like this. With this guy and this guy, this is called the output equation, the state equation, and it's basically, x dot is some function of x, input, and time. This would be, this could be nonlinear. This is linear. This is linear. Okay, we're dealing with linear stuff. When it's linear things, you can write it in terms of, like linear algebra, right? Matrix equation kind of things. So what you need to do is you need to stop me if there's something you don't understand or don't remember. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. So... they have an equation of a spring mass, or an example of a spring mass system here, and what they do is show you how you could write this in terms of the A, B, C, D matrices, and I assume this all kind of is a old hat, I'm hoping anyway. You can pick your state variables as X and X dot, right? And then you end up with something in what they call the controllable canonical form. You remember that stuff?
Yeah, I was going to say, remember.
Yeah, remember those words, yeah. Well, yeah, this is the A matrix, looks like this, 0, 1, and then the coefficients of the characteristic equation. And there's actually several controllable canonical forms. This is called the lower one. It has the characteristic equation on the bottom. You can also have the upper one, which has the characteristic equation on the top. And they're basically related by switching the order of the states. MATLAB, when you ask for a state space method, it gives you the upper controllable canonical form. There's actually an infinite number of different A, B, C, D matrices for this same thing here, right? They're all related by the states or linear combinations one of the other. I mean, like I could take 2x plus 1x dot, and that would give me a new, you know, a new state variable, and I could do, you know, 3x dot minus 1x, and that would be another state variable. I could use those two as two new state variables, and I could rewrite these equations again. It would just be a linear transformation on this equation here, okay? So then you can get the transfer function from this thing. One way of doing it is they do it, drive it down here. It's, you know, x of s equals si minus a inverse bu of s, and y equals cx of s. So you can plug that in there and get y equals c si minus a inverse b times u of s. So your transfer function, you know, this thing like they have up on the top, transfer function y of s over u of s, can be written as c si minus a inverse b, and then, you know, multiply that by u of s and gives you y of s, okay? So you can always get your transfer function back again. This is in, you know, the continuous domain, you know, the Laplace transform kind of way, but there are similar kinds of things we'll do with z transforms, okay? But we're just kind of looking at the continuous situation today. And here's an example with the viscous damper and the mass and so on. And they put in some numbers and, you know, did all those CSI minus A inverse B. Now we're talking about different state space representations. This is the transformation I was talking about. If you do x equals t inverse z or z equals tx, then what you can do is you can substitute that back in there and you end up with z dot equals ta t inverse times z plus tbu. This is the new a in the z space, and this is the new b in the z space, okay? And z's are just linear combinations of the axis, okay? So what I'm saying is there's an infinite number of different ways you can represent this same system in the state space. And some of them are handier than others, you know. Some of them, like the controllable canonical form, is very handy because you can easily see how to control it, okay? And so actually finding the T matrix or the T inverse matrix, the transformation matrix that takes you to one of those nice situations is, you know, an important, you know, thing to be able to do. Okay, so when they talk about this controllable canonical form, they start from the transfer function, and basically what they're doing on the controllable canonical form is they're picking, they take the differential equation, and so the differential equation, maybe it's in, what do they have? V there, okay? So what they do is they pick for their states, they pick V as the first state, V dot is the second state, V double dot, you know, and keep going, you know, until you've got all of them, but not the last one. You know, if this is V double dot or V triple dot, you wouldn't pick that because you only need, you know, N states, and, you know, this would be the N plus first. So you pick those, and then you can write your state equation. You know, the derivative of that vector you just made up equals some A matrix times that vector plus some B matrix times U. And if you do that, you end up with a controllable canonical form, and depending on the way you order your states, you know, if you start from, you know, zero derivatives and move up to N derivatives, you know, top to bottom, you get one controllable canonical form. If you go bottom to top, you get the other one. You know, here's the block diagrams for these things. One thing that's extremely nice to see in the controllable canonical form is how you could take this system, this is the block diagram for the controllable canonical form, how you could take it and you could change the characteristic equation. Because you see, the characteristic equation are made up of these are the coefficients on the characteristic equation, right? And if you want to change the characteristic equation, that means you're changing where the pole locations are, right? If you change those. And you can see very nicely if you had a measurement of V, V dot, V double dot, if you had those three wires coming out, this one, and this one, you can then put little blocks in parallel with those guys, so you could change this A0 to anything you want by putting a feedback here with the little blocks there, which adds right back into the input here, right? So you can make your own external summer out here. Grab this, multiply it by a number here, and then you change the A0 effectively, right? And by changing it to whatever you want, you can, you know, if you can do that for all the coefficients on the characteristic equation, you can do that, you know, to change the poles anywhere you want. Now, there are situations where, you know, there's not any way to get at some of these internal ones, but in the controllable canonical form, if you can put it into that form, then it is always controllable. In other words, you can always get at these things there. But there are other systems of equations that are not controllable. In other words, there's no transformation to take you to this thing right here. Or the transformation matrix, which normally would take you there, is now singular. Okay? In other words, the T is not invertible, so you can't go, you know, you go Z equals TX, but you can't go X equals T inverse Z because T inverse is not doable, right? It's not a full rank matrix. So you can see here, you know, what they're doing. They're putting the B's in here, and, you know, to get your Y. And if you could just, you know, grab off these states right here, then you can, you know, you could actually change the pole locations here. So this is kind of a nice visualization of what's going on, and it helps you see how to control things. Are there questions about that? Does that make sense? Okay. So here's the controllable canonical form. If you remember, you know, you've got minus A0, minus A1, minus A2, and B is 0, 0, 1, C is those are the coefficients on the numerator of the transfer function. So that's an important form. Then this thing right here, the observable canonical form, is this one right here. And if you kind of notice, the A is kind of like the transpose of the other A in some way, right? They're similar. And the B is like what we had for the C before. So they're actually, the controllable and observable canonical forms are what we call duals, kind of. One is a dual of the other one, kind of like back in circuits, you know, the current divider is a dual of the voltage divider. So what does that mean? In that sense, you switch current and voltage, and you get the same equations, okay? In this sense right here, you switch, you switch C and B, and A goes to A transpose. So it's got some similarities to the, you know, that other kind of thing, you know, the duality. But the thing about the observable canonical form, if you can put it in observable canonical form, then you can measure the states, okay? And, you know, I mean, I could quickly kind of give you an idea how that works with the observable canonical form. If you had a thing like this, you know, if you had X dot equals A X plus B U, okay, and I'm just going to do a single input, single output. So you got Y equals C, well, this is, I need to squiggle, C, X, and I'm going to assume there's no output coming in here. I'm just going to do a simple thing like this, okay? And the idea is if you had a differential equation, you know, if you had a, you know, Y double dot plus, you know, A1Y plus A0, let me make this a Y dot here, y dot plus a zero y equals, you know, some b u or something. If you had some differential equation like this, how would you know that you could actually, you know, you could actually figure out what the initial condition was using all of x, you know, using all the y? Okay, what would you do? The idea is you can measure y, but will that give you, you know, all the information about x? Okay, and basically all the information about x is to know what the initial conditions are. Okay, if you could know what the initial conditions are by looking at y, if you can look at y and figure out what all the initial conditions for x are, then it's you know, it's observable. If you can figure out what all the, you know, the numbers are for x equals, you know, say at x equals 0. And the idea is you could do this thing right here, you know, y equals cx. And so if you knew what y was, you know, y equals cx, that's one equation you could write, you know, y equals cx. And then you could look at y dot. Well, that's going to be cx dot, right? Well, we don't know what x dot is, but we don't know specifically what it is, but we could write it like this. It's c times, you know, ax. And if we're plugging in u equals 0 here, kind of make things easier here. So if I just plug in C and then I'll put AX like that. And then you could go, you know, and I guess in this case when it's just a second order system, you kind of see that's all you need. If you knew what Y, what X and X dot was, you could get it. And you can always measure Y and Y dot if you have, you know, a differential equation for that. You know, basically, to get the solution for this, you need to know those two things, right? So if you look at this, you could put this in this matrix here, and you could solve, you could make this a matrix like this, Y, Y dot equals, and then this would be a big matrix here, made up of little matrices, C, and then CA, and this is, you know, a square matrix, and this is basically X over here. So this is the thing you're looking for. And so you can say, you know, if you can invert this matrix, if this, you know, has rank N, you can find X knowing Y. Because if you know Y, you can get Y and Y dot, right? And so if this guy, if you could invert this thing, you'd invert this, multiply it by that, and you'd get X. Yeah, the rank, actually, in some cases, if this was a multiple input, multiple output system, yeah, you know, like say Y was a, you know, a 2x1 or something, then this wouldn't even be a square matrix here, okay? And, but the idea is if there's enough equations here so that you could solve for X, you might not, you can't invert a non-square matrix, but if its rank is at least N, then there's enough information in that matrix to, you know, you can throw out some other equations and still solve for X. So the rank basically means how many linearly independent rows or columns are there in this thing here, CECA. And this is called the observability matrix. And there's a similar kind of argument up for the controllability matrix. Observability matrix, yeah, I could write here. So there's a similar, you know, kind of argument for a controllability matrix. And it actually turns out that the controllability matrix is like B, A, B, and so on, you know, A squared B, and keeps going. And the idea is if you can invert that, B, A, B, A squared B, that's actually part of the, if you can invert that, then you can actually come up with that transformation that will take you to controllable canonical form, and that matrix BAB is actually part of the thing that does that. And this matrix, there is a transformation. If the system is observable, then there's a transformation that will take you to the observable canonical form, which is that thing up there, and it actually has to do with the inverse of this guy right here. Okay, it's part of the transformation matrix. So that's, I think this observability and controllability thing is the thing that actually makes state space more useful in many cases than transfer function stuff. It's because with the transfer function, you can't really see that there are certain states of the system that you can't measure, certain, like you can't get the velocity or whatever, right? You could, you might get some other things, but you can't get that state variable. So, well, observability is necessary for controllability, to control the system, because if you can't observe the thing, then you can't measure those states, even if they were controllable, right? To control it. So you can't, if you can't measure the thing you need to feed back to put into the input, you're toast again. So you need both controllability and observability to actually control something. It still has to be a control or an observable kind of a system. In other words, if that system never had any output from it. I mean, like if we just think about a system, maybe a very simple system, and it has suppose it was an RC circuit, okay? But there was no connection from that circuit back to the outside world. It's little in a little black plastic box, and you can't tell what's going on in that circuit, right? And you can't tell from, well, the output is any indication, of what's inside, right? In other words, there's an input into this box, right? But you can't watch, you can't see what's coming out. And if you can't see what's coming out, then it's hard to, there's no way to actually control that with a PID or anything, because you can't measure what's going on. Right, we always know why, but if C was, say, 0 here, okay? If C was 0, that's in a case where this matrix would be non-invertible, right? Then there is nothing you can do. I mean, the thing, it's going to do whatever it's going to do, but you can't see what it's doing, right? And in real life, that generally doesn't matter. If you can't see it, you don't care about it, right? But in some cases, it can matter. Like, say, maybe it wasn't an RC circuit in that thing, right? And it's in this little box. Maybe it's actually something that's unstable, right? And pretty soon, the box blows up, and then you can see, right? Okay? And so, those kind of issues are important. And you can see that kind of stuff from state space, but sometimes it's hard to see that from the transfer function way of looking at things.
All right, so essentially, with state space, if you can get it into this form, you'll be able to observe everything.
Well, if this matrix here is invertible, then you can, rank n, it doesn't have to be a square matrix, but it's rank n, then you can do it. And I'm just trying to give Andrew an idea where it wouldn't be, right? Like if the C was 0, right?
Yeah.
This is doing its thing up here. This guy's doing its thing.
Yeah.
But we can't see it. Right, any kind of controller. You're toast, right? I mean, if there's no output. But in general, we don't care about that, because if there's no output, we can't see it. It's bliss is ignorance or something, right? Something like that. Does that make sense?
So with just regular transfer function stuff, you can do similar things, but you never know if you can actually, it's just harder to tell.
Well, you see, the thing that the state space method does for you, its transfer function doesn't, to transfer function lumps everything together. It does, you know, C SI minus A inverse B plus D, okay? Now, if C was identically zero, you'd say, well, shoot, I can't see anything, right? But sometimes there's two states in that thing, like a second order differential equation like this one, right? And then it would be possible to have a situation where you could see one of those states, but the other state you can't. Okay? And if that other state that you can't see is something that's going to go unstable, generally, if it goes unstable, sooner or later, you're going to see it. I mean, it's going to do something. It's not going to be a linear system anymore, and it's going to start messing with your state that you can see, and then you're toast, right? Yeah, right. Exactly. You know? And when you do it in this way of doing things, you can see that that's going to happen. Whereas when you just have the transfer function, it's not very transparent. It's not easy to check that. Does that make sense? So this, you know, what I'm saying is you can make your state space like this. You know, here's the, I'm going to call this XC and X. UC, or no, actually, I need four of them here. There's going to be controllable, uncontrollable. It's kind of like you can break your state matrix down into, you know, there's X, controllable and observable, X, controllable, not observable, X, let's see, yeah, controllable, not observable, and X. Not controllable, not observable, okay? So, and then you take the dot of this, right? Dot, 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 and that's going to be this, you know, big A matrix made up of four submatrices here. And this is the A, controllable and observable, and then it's, you know, you got the X, what did I say? C-O, X, C-not O, and X, C, O naught, and X, C naught, O naught, and then plus your, you know, B, which is going to be, you have to think about this, and then you got U. Now, it's kind of the idea here is this guy will have a 1 here, right? And this guy will be a 0, and this guy will be a 1, and that guy will be a 0 or something, right? And this is X, let's see. So X controllable and observable is this times that, and then I've got, how do I do this thing here? It's been a while since I did this here, but the idea is you can do the, you know, the same thing. You're going to have your y, and it's going to be partly, you know, partly made up of x, you know, c o and x, what did I say, c not o, and I like to figure this out here because it's. Well, I'm trying, yeah, that's, it shouldn't be, yeah, how does this work here? I think these guys right here are maybe zero matrices, I don't know, I think, because I don't. Is that, you didn't do this from feedback?
I remember it's like,
yeah. Well, this is the advantage of the I'll have to think about this. This is fuzzy in my own mind here. I mean, you can kind of draw, you know, this state right here, this X not controllable, not observable, is like a little system with no inputs and no outputs, okay? And this X controllable but not observable is a system that you can control, has inputs, but there's no output, okay? And this system right here is a system which has no input, but has an output, okay, that you can see. And this system has, you know, you have an input and an output that you can, you know, you can do that. And so, I mean, maybe it would be just, you know, I could draw your little thing here. You know, you got a little system. This is the system, the integrator, and this is X controllable, observable, like this, right? And dot, and so this is X, I mean, I didn't want not, I want just X controllable, observable. So this is the standard thing, you know, and it has your, it's A matrix, A, C, O, and here's your little thing right here, and this goes back in here, and we have U goes into a B matrix right here, and then that goes in there, right? And so that's that one, and then the next system, which would be X, what is it, controllable not, right? X controllable not, but observable. This has a, you know, a little integrator like this. This is X controllable not, observable. This is the dot of that. And that is, actually, we got, you know, like nothing here. Zero coming in. I mean, in other words, my U doesn't influence anything. Or maybe I just don't even draw the U, right? There is no U coming in, right? And this comes around like this into your A, C not O, like this. And there is, you know, basically nothing coming in here. And then we could draw the next one. You get the picture, do you, here? I mean, maybe I should draw it for completeness. This is X. C O naught dot, and that's X C O naught, and oh, I forgot to put on the Y here. This needs a. This is the C matrix, and we're coming out and influencing Y here, right? And this guy is. It's not observable, so I've got, you know, it comes in here. I've got this B matrix coming in here. And this, of course, goes back around, feedback matrix A, and that goes in there, but there is nothing here, you know, nothing coming out. Here's Y out here, you can't, no connection, right? And then there's the last one, which is like, it's just its own little system and its own little world. But there's no input or output. This is X C bar O bar dot X C bar O bar, and this would be A C bar O bar, and this would be A C O bar. So I haven't quite got these things right. They're actually more like this, okay? This is A, C bar, O bar, and then this is A, C bar, O, and this guy is A, C, O bar, and this is A, C bar, O bar, like that. And so, you know, you can kind of see they're somewhat... In my system here, these are uncoupled. Now you could mess them up with a trans, you know, a T matrix, you know, do a linear combination of this thing, and you could see all these things messed up, but you couldn't see this nice structure here that you have in this uncoupled system. And you know, these pictures right here make good sense to me. And this is how they are when they're, you know, uncoupled, kind of like this. I guess I should do this thing here. This would be C bar O bar. I have a something here, and then I've got not controllable but observable, so I can read that one. And then not observable, these are all zeros here. Right? So these are And this might be an identity matrix, you know, depending on whether this is a one by one or a bunch of outputs. You know, this is, I mean, maybe I should call this YCO or something. And did I put in a Y somewhere? This guy had nothing. I must have needed to have. Where is, does this guy have a Y on him? This guy needs a Y. See, like this. Really, I shouldn't put ones in here. Maybe I should put some numbers, you know. This is B, C, O, and B. What was this? C, O, not O, bar. And this is C, C, O, and C, C, bar, O. Something like that, right? That's what these is. This is C, O, and this is C bar O. This is Y C bar O. And this is Y C O bar nothing equals zero, right? And this guy is also equals zero. Nothing coming out. Does that make sense? And the idea is that you can see this in the state space. If you find the right transformation matrix, you can transform it into this kind of a system. And then you can look at what states are controllable, what states are observable, what states are, you know, not either of those things. Does that make sense? So that's what I'm saying is that's the advantage of this thing, and that's why this observability, observable canonical form and the controllable canonical form are important, because if you can transform your A matrix into a controllable canonical form, then you are, you know, one of these controllable ones. Like, I got the wrong thing there. That should be CO. So anyway, you know, you're this one or this one, right? Does that make sense? And if you can do the observable canonical form, then you're one of, you know, this one or this one. And these other matrices or submatrices are zero. In other words, they're not there. But every system should be, you know, broken up into those kind of things. Now, one of the things that I saw them actually do in chapter 5, I think it was, which we didn't go over, is, you know, sometimes people will put a zero on top of a pole to cancel it out. And I saw them, you know, the textbook did that. And, you know, that is a problematic kind of a thing. I mean, mathematically it looks good, right?
Yeah.
But what are you doing in reality? What you're doing is you're making one of these things see no evil, hear no evil, right? You're basically changing your thing so it's not observable, right? That doesn't mean that the thing won't blow up and cause you problems. Does that make sense? I mean, it just means you won't see it. Furthermore, it's actually very difficult to put a pole right smack on top of, I mean, a zero right smack on top of a pole in any real way. Because you're going to be off by, you know, a fraction of a something, right? And you're not going to quite do what you were trying to do, right? So actually, I think that's one of the examples of things that people did with classical control that was easy to see what you were doing wrong when you look at it this way, but not easy to see what you're doing wrong there, except in the case, well, you're trying to cancel things they didn't quite exactly cancel. But even if they did exactly cancel, at some point your system probably wouldn't be linear anymore, and you would still see the effect, you know. So, you know, the state space method is actually, you know, it gives you more information, I think, about the system than the, you know, transfer function methods. But it's also more work, right? I mean, there's more stuff you have to do here. But it's useful. So does that business make sense to you? This, you know, splitting this up and looking at these different states that way. Okay, so that's why the observable canonical form is important. And now there's this other form, which you probably remember even better than those controllable and observable canonical forms. It's the form that decouples the modes, okay? Decouples the states. So if you get the right linear combination of states, you can end up with an A matrix, which is like diagonal. Or in some cases, it could be a what we call a Jordan block, which has little ones over the super diagonal here. And that happens when you have repeated eigenvalues. So when you have repeated eigenvalues, you can have a Jordan block. You don't have to. You can, or you know, may or may not. And that, of course, makes things more difficult because then it's actually, you know, not a diagonal matrix. The advantage of this is if you have an equation that's AX equals lambda X, this is like the eigenvalue equation you guys studied in linear algebra, this is very easy to find the matrix exponential for. And the matrix exponential, as we saw the other day, is inherent in the solution to this equation, right? Anything that's diagonal or uncoupled is easier to deal with than something that's coupled. And so, you know, I mean, even if you see what we did there, we kind of diagonalized the thing kind of blockwise, right, in order to see what was going on more easily. So you can get there, and the transformation matrix, you probably remember this T right here, is actually made up of the eigenvectors. You know, you line up the eigenvectors one right after the other. And that's actually maybe T inverse. I can't remember. It's T inverse or T. Probably T inverse is the eigenvectors. So do you remember diagonalizing those matrices and so on? You know, coming up with a transformation to give you a diagonal form. That's really handy for solutions especially. Okay, so if that makes sense, then let's quickly go look at the MATLAB tools. MATLAB does a lot of this stuff for you. So the first one to look at is TF to SS. That's transfer function to state space. Okay, and it gives you the controllable canonical form, or the upper controllable canonical form. Okay, so that's kind of nice. Here it is. There's the A matrix. Notice that the coefficients of the characteristic equation are on the first row. And the B has the 1 on the first row instead of the last row. And if you want to get to the regular one, here is the transformation. They call it flip up down of the identity matrix. In other words, it's got a backwards diagonal. What this does is it swaps the order of your states. It just changes, you know, the first state is the last state and so on. So you can go to the regular controllable canonical form, the lower one right here, using that matrix, if you want to, from the MATLAB thing. Let's see. And then there's the backwards of that, state space to transfer function. So if you have a state space, which you entered in, you know, the A, B, C, D matrices, and then you can get the transfer function, and it'll give you the numerator polynomial and the denominator polynomial. And this, they have the analogies that also go to Z transforms, you know, instead of F. This is all F we're talking about here, though. Okay, let's see. So if you want to diagonalize the thing, they take that same example, and they did the, you know, the T inverse is the matrix of the eigenvectors. And if you do it the way they did it right here, you can end up with these little blocks right here with the real part of the eigenvalues here and the imaginary part of the eigenvalues there. But usually what I do is I just let my A matrix, my new A matrix, be an complex matrix, and I just put the eigenvalues on the thing and I use complex eigenvectors. These guys didn't want to use complex eigenvectors, so they did it this way. But I usually just do it the other way. It seems nicer to me because it fits the general way of doing things even when they aren't complex. And I like that better myself. But, you know, it's nice to realize that you can do it this way. So So, any questions so far? Okay, so then they have some nice things in MATLAB that will allow you to simulate things. You can make a system, you know, with the ABCD matrices using the sys command. And then you can find the step response. You can it gives you the y vector, the t vector, and the states there with the step response. And then if you want just the zero input response here, this is due to the initial condition, you can use the initial thing. And if you want in general, which is like kind of what I use, usually is LSIM. LSIM will do the linear simulation and give you the answer, you know, the solution for any input with any initial conditions. So, then there's a few homework problems, like the one you're going to do. And I think that's the end. Any questions? Okay, well, I don't know what to say, but, you know, I'm going to kind of assume that stuff is mostly there.
In coming back, I remember going to something like this.
Yeah.
Is it easy to extend this to multiple?
Yes, that's, very easy, yeah. Yeah, no, in fact, state space is better for multi-input, multi-output than the transfer function methods. Because you just make your y vector, you know, n by one, or, you know, m by one, or whatever, just as many as you got, right? Yeah, I mean, a very nice multi-output system would be if the C matrix was the identity matrix, right? In which case, you know, wow, wouldn't that be great? You know, because then you got your states right there, right? And sometimes, you see, you're the guy who makes the model, right? In fact, you're doing that for the pendulum, right? So, you know, don't make some mixed up thing. I mean, obviously, you could make your whole, you know, thing for your, you know, your model for your pendulum. You could make it some certain way and then just say, just to make this tougher, I'm going to pick this random T matrix and transform this into something else, you know. But no, try and make it so it makes sense, you know? I mean, do the things to make your life easy. That's correct. That's what we measure. So our C matrix, you know, you got some number on each of those things. The rest of them are zeros. But that doesn't mean you've lost hope, you know? Because this guy right here could give it to you, right? Does that make sense? Or in your case, you know, the CA squared or, you know, CA cubed. You know, depending, you have more states, so you can still get it from those other things. So next day what we're going to do is we're going to go back to how does this all relate to discrete stuff. So we'll be looking at Chapter 7. So if you haven't had a chance, you know, go back through and read Chapter 6, and then you might want to start reading Chapter 7. There was a little bit of stuff I did here from Chapter 7, you know, but we're gonna actually start trying to control things in Chapter 7.